We're going to take a look at the top five draft picks now in the second segment of our final pre-draft preview on the NFL show. We come in at five with the Chargers, the consensus pick for them according to the NFL mock draft database, which crunches all the numbers and looks at all of the mock draft boards. They reckon is Malik Nabers, wide receiver, LSU. Our picks, Shane has them taking Marvin Harrison Jr. I have them taking Roma Dunze. Noel has them taking Malik Nabers. Kieran has them taking Marvin Harrison Jr. And Brian, you have them taking Marvin Harrison Jr. as well. Does he fall to five or do they have to go up to get him? Sorry, I haven't looked at whether you're factoring in a trade here.
I am factoring in a trade. I'm factoring in the Vikings moving up to four. We spoke about the Cardinals there, and I had this strategy of moving around the board, and essentially that means them getting out there at four and being comfortable doing that, allowing the Vikings to come up. I was kind of giving my fourth pick away now. But that leads to Marvin Harrison essentially sitting there, and there's been a lot of talk that the right thing to do for the Chargers would be to take offensive line and start giving Justin Herbert additional security. I think with Marvin Harrison on the board, I think it's too much to give away. And there's also talk today the Colts are going to try to push to get into the top five to get Marvin Harrison Jr. and reunite him with the team, which is fine. I prayed for. So I think as we get close tomorrow, he might even become the bigger hunter prospect and potentially a quarterback in terms of the team's potential moving up. But I think the Chargers would be mad to step away from. They've lost Mike Williams. They've lost Eckler. They've lost Frazee. We talk about Keenan Allen going to the Bears. They're very light touching in a lot of positions offensively. I think he would make so much sense, and I think he'd be a marquee player to have alongside Justin Herbert.
You have Malik Nabers going at five, Noel, to the Chargers. He's one of those players, again, there's usually about five or six in every first round who the opinion varies wildly on, and the longer you go on with it, like I've had every take on Malik Nabers to, he's an absolute dud, he plays in the slot the whole time, he's not NFL ready, can't run the route tree, right the way through to, don't sleep on this guy, he's the best wide receiver in the draft, you'd be mad to take Marvin Harrison Jr. above.
I'm not quite there now. I think Nabers is the second best receiver in the draft after Marvin Harrison Jr. But for a lot of what Brian said there, you know, they lost their wide receivers in Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. You know, they need to fill those gaps. And I think, again, I don't think there's a huge difference between the first and second wide receiver. So I think when a player like this at a position where you absolutely have a need for your young quarterback to have more weapons, I just think it's hard to turn down a player like Nabers if you're the Chargers. I know people have talked about them maybe moving out, but I think if they can get Harrison or they can get Nabers, I think you make that move, because that just helps your young quarterback so much to have a player like that in there.
Kieran, and we're factoring in trades again here just so people are aware, but you have Marvin Harrison Jr. going to the Chargers, who I'm sure Justin Herbert would love to have in his arsenal. Like, people talk about the Bills trying to emulate the Chiefs and, you know, have Josh Allen bring the best out of a bunch of palookas, but Justin Herbert doesn't look like the guy who's going to be able to do that. So you want a blue chip receiver in there for him?
Yeah, you do. I mean, you lost a lot on offense. Mike Williams and Keenan Allen, like we said already. Chargers. I mean, we all know what happened at the tail end of last season. They've got to reestablish themselves, not just in the league but also in their own city. I mean, a lot of people have said that. That stadium is a home game to a lot of road teams, and they have to start establishing identity. I think a stud like Marvin Harrison will start with that. Herbert needs somebody who he can trust. Harbaugh is going to need somebody that can, you know, get the points going in the first couple of games. I watched a lot of Marvin Harrison Jr. with Ohio State this past season, you know, just beating up on Michigan State and Purdue and putting up two, three touchdowns and, you know, 240, 250 yards a game. He ended up the season with 14 touchdowns. Ohio State kind of faded towards the end against Michigan, but 1,200 some odd yards. He's a no-doubter. You could tell people in college, and you can tell players, whether it be Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, you know, you can tell when they're going to be studs and horses in the NFL. And you know, not even taking into account the pedigree with his father. I mean, he's just there's a lot of maybes in the NFL. He's pretty much nailed on wide receiver one. So I think he's going to do great things with Los Angeles.
Well, let's go to number four now, where the Cardinals' consensus pick is Marvin Harrison Jr. That, depending on what happens further up the board, and you know, this is really between 1, 2, 3, and 4, where all the action could happen, and we're obviously hoping from a drama point of view that there will be plenty of it on the night. We're kind of split between ourselves here as regards whether that will happen or not, though. And maybe I'll get to the alternative scenario first. Noel, you see them taking Marvin Harrison Jr. and him being available at four. If you're committed to Kyler Murray as the quarterback, which Gannon and the organization are, then you want the very best available for him to throw to. And they haven't really had that X receiver for him prior to his injury, and that's what they want.
Absolutely. Look, it's very similar to the Chargers, the spot before. You have a young, talented quarterback that you really need to give the best chance, and you have massively gaping hole at wide receiver. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is arguably, you know, depending on who you talk to, if not the best player in the draft, certainly the second or third best player within the draft. And I think, again, it's a very big player to pass up on when you have such a need, and his potential is sky high. So for me, I think they make that move. As you say, you've got Kyler Murray there. You've got a lot of money invested in him. You want to make sure he has the tools that he needs. And starting off with potentially the best player in the draft, who is a wide receiver, is a great start to start building up. So now the Cardinals have a lot of picks anyway, so they can, you know, they can build from there.
Kieran, you have Malik Nabers going at 3.
Yeah.
4, rather. Sorry, 4.
Yeah, sorry, 4. Yeah. That Cardinals roster right now does not look like an NFL roster. They need skilled position players to help out Kyler Murray. Malik Nabers, 6 foot. He's your classic kind of slot receiver. You think of NFL slot receivers that are, you know, putting up monster numbers. You think of Justin Jefferson, the guy that got paid with the Browns today, St. Brown, Tyreek Hill, even somebody like Chris Godwin. He's got those kind of characteristics. A shade over 6 foot, about 200 pounds. Makes catches for fun. He's a phenomenal athlete. He's got fantastic speed and a one-on-one jump situation. He's always coming out against the corner. Cardinals are going to take him because they need skill positions. They need a wide receiver 1, and they need someone to take the load off James Conner. So that's where they're going.
Brian, we've tried to avoid the spoiler on this one, but it's hard as we move through the previous picks. You have a scenario, both yourself and Shane, in fairness, have the same scenario here where JJ McCarthy goes at 4. How does that come about?
Yeah, I think whilst we have a comment in around, do we think the Giants could trade up to 4? I think that's, we have spoke with the Giants at 6, and Kieran is suggesting that potentially that is in play, that they could come up to 4 or 3. So this very similar scenario. I think it's relevant to call it here because we are talking about questions coming around the 4th pick. I just think we've seen too much over the course of the last month. I mean, the Vikings have put themselves in a position which allows them to come up. So they've got the 11th pick, the 23rd pick. I think the Cardinals, I touched on it there, having saw it last year in terms of the jostling, which is the GM does. I think he becomes from moving out. And the Cardinals, for me, are a real intriguing team. And again, I'm going to get into tomorrow night. But if they were to make this trade, and bear in mind that they have the 27th pick, they've got the Texans pick from last year's trade to get up to get Will Anderson on the back of them taking CJ Stroud. The Cardinals could be looking at having the 11th, 23rd, and the 27th. Like, that's a lot of ammunition to one move around the board potentially with additional picks later on, or get 3 stud players in this draft, because this is how you tout as one of the best drafts for some time. And we saw life from this Cardinals team towards the back end of the season when Kyler Murray came back. They looked like a team, you know, going in the right direction. I think we were pleasantly surprised by the head coach, you know, early on in the season. Looked like they were going to be the whipping boy, but we saw quickly that kind of changed early on, and they beat the Cowboys. I mean, if I was a Cardinals team, I'd be optimistic.
I'm just interested in your thought, and maybe this is something that we'll get into in more detail tomorrow night, but if the Cardinals, say, trade out of this and they don't get the stud receiver, and, you know, this is something we can spend a little bit more time on tomorrow, not to frustrate people by saying, oh, we'll get to that tomorrow. But the record of taking wide receivers in the first round, unless you take one of the top 2 or 3 off the board, hasn't actually been particularly good over the last couple of years. You know, for all the hits, there's plenty of misses in the first round as well. And, you know, you can get cute and decide to pass up with Justin Jefferson and you end up with Kadarius Toney.
That is true. I would suggest if the wide receiver's not there, if they don't move back up, say they do trade back to 11, I think they'd be comfortable going in a different position. I think they'd look to get the wide receiver potentially in the middle or late first round. As Kieran's alluded to over the course of the last few weeks, there's some other valuable wide receivers in this draft, and another one coming out of LSU, which is further down the rankings in terms of matching up against Malik Nabers. But I still think there's enough there for them to consider, which I think a lot of teams will feel. If we don't get one of these marquee wide receivers in the top 3, we'll get someone else in the first round. And I think the Cardinals will be comfortable at that. Maybe that's what they do with that 27th pick. But I think if they're at an 11, having traded, or whatever team comes up to 4, I think they might reposition themselves in terms of what they do with their opening pick. And they may go defense and they may go edge rusher. So it could be a scenario where a Dallas Turner or Bears goes there. But so, yeah, I get it. I understand it. And the nature is they do need a wide receiver. But I think there's enough there for him to justify moving down if they get the value.
Okay, let's jump to three because I want to go to you on this, Kieran, first up, because you're looking at a trade. You're looking at JJ McCarthy, but you see him going to three, going to three instead of four.
Yeah, I see the Vikings moving up. I mean, they got the 11-23. They might even throw in the first next year just to sweeten the pot. Patriots have not shot down any suggestions that they're closed on three. They've been very talkative about the fact that they're open to anything. And we see a lot of teams shoot down, we're not open or we're not thinking about anything. And then, you get to Thursday night about 8 o'clock and then the rumors start flying. And next thing you know, teams are picking the phone up and going back and forth. Vikings, there's an obvious quarterback need. McCarthy's a bit of an enigma. If you had asked me a couple of months ago, would he be a first rounder? I would have said no. Game manager, just doing enough under Harbaugh to get wins. But the more you read, the more you see, the more you hear. There's a lot of movement towards him in the first 10 and even the top five. Not outstanding numbers, 49 TDs and 11 picks in 3 years in college. You think about that, 49 touchdowns in 3 years. That's not a number that stands out really when you're playing in the Big Ten and you're beating up on smaller teams. 27-1 as a starter. That's what I think a lot of GMs are looking at. Under Harbaugh, you have that winning mentality already there. He's had a huge amount of, I don't want to say NFL-ready players, but Blake Corum, Roman Wilson to throw to, and he's always had huge horses up front to block for him. So he's not really been tested to that extent, but a lot of people, and, I've listened to a lot of people say that, once the shackles come off, he's going to be a gunslinger and he's going to be a real difference maker in the NFL. They're selling me on it. I think a combination of all that, plus the fact that the Vikings are just dying for a quarterback, leads me to believe that they're going to push not the panic button, but the let's go button, and they're going to pick up.
But it's a real tale of, and I'm really interested in the way this one goes down tomorrow night. There's a lot of picks that we're really interested in, obviously, but this one, because it's a tale of two situations, right? You think if I'm JJ McCarthy or I'm whoever goes to the Vikings, that's a great spot to end up in. Kevin O'Connell really knows what he's doing. That team was going really well before Cousins got injured. They have a lot of the pieces in place. Really exciting what Brian Flores did with very little available to him on the defensive side. And the way he creatively blitzed the hell out of people was a joy to behold last season for those of us who like a bit of that dog in our defensive football. But on the other hand, if the Patriots don't go for the quarterback, and there's people making the argument that they shouldn't, because you're just going to break whatever guy comes in because it's a bad situation to land in. There is an argument for them trading out of that, going filling roster holes elsewhere, and just rolling with what they have.
Yeah, who's about that one, Connor? Do you want me to jump in on that one, then?
Sorry, you jump in on that one. Yeah, go on, Brian.
No, I just think of all the teams tomorrow night who's going to let that clock tick down at three, it's the Patriots. We've seen time and time again, fans will say, oh, what did they know they're picking? Make that selection. But in this case, I think the Patriots are open to moving down. I think of all the teams, there's, it's been well touted and over the course, in particular over the last week as we get closer, that they are extremely comfortable moving down if the right offer comes in. And I think they will allow every opportunity for someone to come in and hit that panic button or the let's go button, which Kieran has alluded to. But I think if it's the Vikings, I think that type of scenario would happen very quickly. I think the deal would be done quite quickly. I think it's a scenario where someone else might think the Vikings have it done, i.e. the Giants, and move up quickly, move up. But I think of all the picks tomorrow night, we might be watching that clock tick down for 10 minutes waiting for the Patriots to come in. I think they will allow themselves every opportunity to get a deal from somewhere.
Noel, I won't ask you how far you think the clock will tick down, but you have the Patriots taking Jaden Daniels at three.
No, I actually have the Vikings moving up to take Jaden Daniels there. So I'm along with Kieran there, actually, in terms of, look, the Vikings made a big call when they let Kirk Cousins go. And as you say, they are a team that is primed for a good quarterback to come in to kind of hit the ground running. I think New England have so many holes there. And you said it yourself, Connor. They could break any young quarterback that comes in there. There's no wide receivers. There's no line. I just don't see the sense in them taking a quarterback there now. I think they could move back the Vikings have locked and loaded and ready. We see the picks they built up to kind of make that move. So I think it kind of fits right for both teams. I think Jaden Daniels will be the last of the big three quarterbacks kind of waiting there. I don't see the JJ McCarthy move that people are talking about. I don't see him jumping that high. I think Daniels is a player who can come in, and he's probably one of the more NFL-ready quarterbacks. I think he could come into that team and kind of really make an impact. Obviously, when you have Justin Jefferson there, that's a massive kind of boost. But yeah, I think that's the way it works out. I think the Vikings they've set themselves up. They need to make a move, given what they've done. And I think the Patriots are a good team to trade down because they need to make lots of moves with that roster they have, especially on offense.
Very good. Sorry, my mistake. No, I see now that you had Jaden Daniels through a trade there. Misread my script again. Having a nightmare here tonight. Brian, let's come to you for the Commanders at two. The consensus pick is Jaden Daniels, and that indeed is what you see Washington doing with their pick.
Yeah, I think over the course of the last week, we've seen these conversations from, you know, him being a bit disappointed with the nature of the visit with all the various different quarterbacks coming in. And we even spoke to Steve Weiss about it. He felt that that might have been a story last week. It's kind of gone away now, and they've figured it all out, and they've come to a clear understanding of the nature of that. In fact, we haven't read too much.
Well, Weiss did make an interesting point, which a lot of people had forgotten about, and it was well made, that that's exactly the narrative that was around CJ Stroud and the Texans last year.
Yeah, absolutely. And then what happens come draft, I think all these smokescreen and storylines go away because ultimately they make the pick. And I think we always see general managers very quickly thereafter when they do the opening press conference say, he was always their guy, he was always their selection. Of course they're going to say that, they're not going to say anything otherwise, but I think we're seeing that tomorrow night. And I think over the course of the last few days, it's starting to kind of ease off. I think ultimately come 1:30 a.m. there, that's tomorrow night going into Friday morning, I think ultimately Jaden Daniels will be the selection of the Commanders. I think they'll be comfortable with what they do.
No, you have Drake May going at two rather than Jaden Daniels, as you've explained. Jaden going in a trade at three, in your view. Drake May, we've talked about a little bit already. Why do you think he fits what Washington is trying to do?
I think for me, it came down to obviously Daniels and May. And I think while Daniels may hit the ground running next season a bit better than May, I think May has that bigger upside over the long term. And I think if you're Washington, you have a new owner, you have a new, you know, coaches, everything is new there. You have that time to bring in what I think is a quarterback who can develop into a really, really good player. You look at him, he has the build, he is athletic. Look, he's not a runner like Daniels, but he can move if he needs to. He has a massive arm, a few accuracy issues. But again, as I say, that's something I think you can deal with and you can work with. But I think in the long term, a team that's kind of building out again with new ownership and everything, I think he is the quarterback they could bring in for the long term. So that's why I kind of have him nudged ahead of Daniels. And well, look, who knows? Between the two of them, it could go either way. But I just think that upside gives them that little bit of an edge for the Commanders in their building process.
Daniels at two works for you as well, Kieran. You know, again, both sides of the spectrum here. On one side, the narrative is, this guy looks the part, much in the way that Joe Burrow looked the part. You know, he exploded. Once he has weapons around him, he can take absolute advantage of them and just let him go.
Yeah. Washington are in a position right now where they've got to start, you know, pulling back on the rest of the NFC East. They've fallen so far behind, and not just the league, but also, you know, in that division. They now have the longest active playoff win drought. It's going to be 20 years in a year's time. Since 2005, they haven't had a playoff win. Dan Quinn is going to have to hit the ground running. He knows that he's got a fan base, and he's got, you know, new owners that are going to want to see some results pretty quickly. They need a lot, and luckily they have 9 picks, so they're going to spread those around. And they've got, I think it's pretty front loaded. They've got a lot in the second and third. They haven't added a lot, Austin Eckler and Zach Ertz, but Marcus Mariota is not going to do it at quarterback. I think Jaden Daniels is the obvious pick for him at two. My concern with Jaden Daniels, and, you know, obviously they need a lot of other stuff, but my concern with Jaden Daniels is his size, 6'4", 181. That speaks to me more of a slot receiver or a wide receiver one. I've heard a lot of talk that he's going to have to bulk up 20 to 25 pounds to get up there. I just don't see him staying at a weight like that. He's going to have to get up to 215. He put up huge numbers at LSU, but
on the plus side, though, Kieran, there's money to be made there for endorsing whichever supplements helps him get off the 215. That's likely to be his first partnership, his brand partnership.
Yeah, well, I mean, as big as the guys are in the league, they hit that much harder. I mean, in college, they hit that much harder in the NFL, and he's gonna have to bulk up a little bit to absorb those hits. He's gonna get up to at least 210. They did pick up Biadasz. I think that's how you pronounce it, from the Cowboys. He's got all the characteristics to be a great, you know, start for the Washington Commanders, but they have a huge amount of holes to fill in there at pretty much everywhere, whether it be guard, tackle, corner.
You've Daniels going to them as well, Brian, but again, you know, as Kieran's outlined there, they've kind of seen this movie before in Washington, and I'm sure they also will be a little bit anxious given the way the RG3 career ended for him, having had such an exciting and explosive first season. Injuries obviously derailed his career, and he was never the same again. And we've, you know, Daniels has already had a couple of season-ending injuries throughout his career, so it's a risk.
Yeah, it is a risk, and again, I think it's such a mixed opinion. I get where Nell's coming from. He sees the bigger upside. I think ultimately when they brought in Cliff Kingsbury, For the nature of no matter which particular quarterback we're going to take a quarterback from the college game, he's just come from the college game, that he'd be comfortable coaching up this quarterback, and we have seen him do quite well in the past, and even the opening season when he was head coach with the Cardinals in terms of developing Kyler Murray. So I think they will recognise that he's come in and he'll be comfortable, and Dan Quinn will allow him to do what he needs to do to make sure this quarterback is effective from day one, because essentially this quarterback, whether it is May or whether it's JJ Daniels or even this odd conversation where JJ McCarthy may even go to, ultimately he's going to start next season, and he's going to be ready, much aware that the pressure is going to be on from day one going in there. But I think that's the nature of why they went down the route of bringing in a college offensive coordinator, albeit he'd been with previous head coaching experience in the league. That for me is the piece, and I think Jaden Daniels makes a lot of sense for the card.
No, the first overall pick goes to the Bears, and, you know, there won't be a drum roll on this one. The consensus pick is Caleb Williams. We all have Caleb Williams going there. It's the most foregone of foregone conclusions. It'd be an absolute shocker to end all shockers if anything other than that was to happen. But talk to us about Caleb. Is he a can't-miss prospect, or is he, and the closer he gets to the draft now, the couple of people come out of the woodwork saying, oh, I wonder... Somebody out yesterday saying, there's a couple of doubts surfacing about personality, character, whatever. Like, people will look for any excuse that they may be proven right on the off chance that things go wrong, and they can point back to that hot take down the line. But do you see him as the can't miss?
No, look, there's no such thing as a can't miss, especially when it comes to a quarterback in the Chicago Bears. But I think he is the right pick and the best pick in this draft for the Bears. Look, he's something they desperately miss. He's a quarterback who can make things happen. They've gone out and they've deliberately put pieces in place now. Gerald Everett, Keenan Allen, you know, they brought in some linemen there to kind of bulk up there as well, in Bates, who came from the Bills, and Colby Shelton to go in at center there. So it looks like what they're doing is they're learning from previous regimes who just drafted quarterbacks and threw them in with nothing around them. But in terms of Caleb Williams himself, I mean, you kind of mentioned it there. When people talk negatively about him, they're not talking negatively about what he does on the field. You know, they're talking about what he does off the field. And that, to me, says that, like, no one's perfect. He has his issues on the field, but they're not as glaring. I think he's a player. The worst thing I hear about people say is that he goes off script too much kind of, you know, hero ball. Well, you have to look at the team he was playing at. Look how bad that defense was. Look what they gave up every week. It came to a point last year where he was getting criticized for losing games, but then they'd lose the game 43-47. And you're like, wait, how can you put that on the quarterback? You know, the kind of way. So I think he is that talented, exciting player who can make all the throws. He's athletic. He has a strong arm on him. And I think for the Bears, it's a big one now. It is an important one, though, for Ryan Poles. But I think it's the right move. I think he's a player that's going to make them better. I think they've built a team to kind of suit him. And yeah, it's just now it's up to the Bears to go out there and to maximize him. I did have an interview the other day that will drop beforehand. And the point made by Greg Braggs from CHGO is, you know, it's the right move, but now these Bears coaches need to do their job and they need to maximize this talent and do what other coaches haven't done for the Bears previously. So I think it's a good move. And as a Bears fan, I'm genuinely excited now to see how everything kind of works when this move gets made.
Brian, it's an interesting pick, and you know, not that it's a surprise, but I suppose one of the things that's interesting, and you mentioned Jaden Daniels going into quite a pressurized situation in Washington with everything that's riding out. Caleb Williams goes into a very pressurized system, even given, you know, what comes with the baggage of being the number one overall pick, because he's not arriving into a completely broken team that's picking at first because they were the worst team in the league, as the Bears were last year. He's coming into a team that's made progress, that's fixed a lot of gaps, seems to have got the defensive side of the ball right, that has, as Noel said, added weapons in anticipation of having the support infrastructure around a rookie quarterback. So, and it's a 7-win team from last year, right, which is unusual, very unusual for a number one overall pick because it came via the Panthers. He's expected to win and win quickly.
Yeah, I think ultimately that might be the biggest test of the season. I don't think anybody can, you know, question his overall play from what we saw in the college game. You know, there's right, some particular podcast is a bit outspoken about how loose he can be in terms of his cannon, and he lets the ball fly at the inappropriate targets in the games. But, you know, again, these are the things, I suppose, steep learning courses he'll have. But you're right, he's going into a team, and where Roshan went into him last year, and look, it was a difficult year for him. There wasn't lofty expectations. I wouldn't say the lofty expectations for the Bears, but certainly think people do expect them to be ultimately challenging to be up there again. You know, it's a competitive division. We spoke with the Vikings potentially making a move. The Packers obviously rebounded after the Aaron Rodgers, you know, move, and they made the playoffs. The Lions have done what they've done and brought the championship game. But people will expect the Bears to be challenging, you know, next season, certainly to be in a wild card position. And that comes with the pressure of a new quarterback that will quickly learn if he's has early struggles, and the questioning comes and the pressure comes, how he deals with that. Maybe ultimately it won't be about what he does on the field, it's about how he reacts to certain things off the field. We saw a couple of years ago with Jets and Zach Wilson, how he dismissed certain things in press conferences, which kind of only led to people disliking him even more as opposed to what he was doing on the field. I think it'd be interesting to see how he gets on the opening few months and he deals with that particular pressure. And it'll only ramp up as the schedule comes out. People see who the Bears play week one, week two, and how quickly he's on the bright lights of NBC for various different games, Sunday Night Football, and absolute piano, etc.
I'll give you the last word on the number one overall pick here. And you've watched so much more of this tape than we have as the resident college football junkie. And I might put to you something that I heard Daniel Jeremiah say, which made an awful lot of sense, which is when you're evaluating these quarterbacks at the top end of the draft, sometimes what separates them in people's minds is how you got to allow for what one guy had and how you got to subtract what another guy didn't have. So if you take, say, Jaden Daniels, for example, unbelievable season, but people are going, yeah, but he had Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. to throw to. You know, Drake May didn't have those weapons. Caleb Williams probably, if anything, elevated his draft stock last year by having overall a pretty damn good season, despite having very little around him and a defense that let them down on a weekly basis. However, if you're looking for a knock, the Notre Dame game was one that stuck in a lot of people's craw as you really didn't show there.
Yeah, and what a lot of people forget is that at USC, he had a terrible line. I mean, he was improvising a lot because that line was folding right in front of him. He was scrambling a lot. A game against UCLA stands out. There was a whole bunch of plays where the line crumbled as soon as the ball was snapped, and he was just spraying it left and right, and he was making plays out of nothing. I mean, if ever there was a quarterback that's NFL ready and that's you know, hitting the ground running as an NFL prospect, it's this guy. I mean, he's been living in a penthouse in Los Angeles. He's got his $10 million NIL money. He could have come out last year. He took his time. Didn't have a huge amount of weapons. He's got Jerry Rice's – well, he did have Jerry Rice's son to throw to. Not a great USC team. Historically a phenomenal team in college football that produces a huge amount of NFL talent. But, what you know, you did talk about the defense, but that O-line, it's forgotten a lot. It was really, really bad. And that led to a lot of the scrambling plays that you saw last year, a lot of the speed, a lot of the footwork that he's developed, and thinking on his feet and those circus plays and just being able to make something out of nothing. He's another thing to remember is he's come through, you know, he started, he came to Oklahoma you know, he came through where Baker Mayfield and Jalen Hurts and Kyler Murray have been with Lincoln Riley, and he's come through a system where it's almost like they're prepping them for NFL careers. And he's had a great pathway. Everything he's done up until now has pointed right toward the NFL. My main concern with him, and I think I've brought it up in the past, I just have a couple of problems, not problems, but I have a couple of question marks about his mental makeup. I'm not going to bring up him crying after some losses, because I'm not going to fault a professional player from being emotional after a game. I just have some questions about big city life and those Friday nights coming out of the clubs at 4 a.m. saying something that might trigger some people or piss people off. I'm just concerned about him going teetering towards that LeBron level of splitting people in one camp or another. I think he's got phenomenal talent. I think his mouth is going to get him in trouble a couple of times this year. I think he's going to have to be mindful of that. But I think he's going to be a great quarterback if he can figure out the social aspect. And, you know, the social
media. Chicago has been waiting 40 years for another legend quarterback who spills out of nightclubs at 4 a.m.
Well, that's true.
I protect that all day long.
There was no TikTok back in the day when old Headband was walking around.
He didn't need TikTok.
he had some great games in college. I mean, he put up huge numbers on Deion Sanders, Colorado. He did get beat up by Notre Dame, but I think if ever there was a quarterback coming out of the draft that's ready to hit the ground running, I think he's going to be a Baker Mayfield kind of impact. From college into the NFL, a lot of razzmatazz, a lot of fanfare. I just hope that he can, you know, keep his feet in the ground and understand that, you know, there's a lot more to being an NFL quarterback than the TikTok and Instagram.
Go razzmatazz. We will have that pick coming up in just over 24 hours' time. Just a reminder that we're going live. Watch along with us from 1 a.m. on Friday morning. Once the NFL draft gets underway in Detroit, we're going right through to the end of the first round. All 32 picks, analysis and insight right with us here and on Instagram, on our Instagram channel. And that's all for our last pre-draft preview, 10-1. You can check out the other two segments where we went from 32 to 11 over the past 2 weeks in anticipation of the draft tomorrow night, so you can have all your homework done when we get to the meat and drink of who's actually picking whom, and dispense with mock drafts and consensus pick and start figuring out what's going to happen with the new acquisitions that each team put on the board. That's all for the NFL show, Irish NFL show for now. We'll be back with you very soon.